ahead and take the speed up your number one now, runway 27, clear to land green dot. Welcome to Oshkosh, guys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of EAA's The Green Dot, a podcast for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. I'm one of your hosts, sort of flying solo today. My name's Chris Henry. I'm the museum manager here at the EAA Aviation Museum in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I have three friends here with me today that we're going to talk about some really fascinating things. So immediately to my left, we have Rose Dorsey, who is the membership chair of the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. Across from me is John Dorsey, who is a long-term friend of the EAA and all things aviation here in Oshkosh and Wisconsin areas here. And then to the right is the Historical Image Preservation Chair, Dan Silvers. This will all become clear as why we have these certain people here. I hope you guys are along for a ride to enjoy this. I'm really looking forward to it. There's just a lot to talk about, so we'll just jump right in. First off, thank you guys for being here.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Chris.
Great being here.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting that it's taken this long to get you guys on, and it's one of those things where you just don't always talk to the cool sites that are in your own backyard. You don't go see those all the time. So it's really cool that that you and Hal had crossed paths about doing this, and really excited. So first off, for those who are listening who maybe aren't aware, you know, Rose, do you want to talk to us a little bit about what is the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame and what's some of the background there?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. The Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame was organized in 1985, and it has a mission of, and I'm going to read it so I don't miss any important points, is to collect and preserve the aviation history of Wisconsin, recognize those who made it, inform others of it, and promote aviation education. And we do that in a number of ways. We collect and preserve history with photographs, stories. We've published a book called Forward in Flight, The History of Aviation in Wisconsin. We do a lot of articles, and we have a I was going to say a significant archives that became more significant recently, and we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. And then we recognize people in a number of ways. Number one, through our inductions. We do that annually. We've inducted more than 150 men and women since 1985. All of the plaques are hanging in the lower level over by the Fergus Plaza here at the EAA Aviation Museum. And our inaugural group of inductees was three people, including Paul Pobrezny, of course. And then when we talk about inform others of it, we do a quarterly magazine. We do presentations at aviation clubs and civic organizations. And we go to events and take part. And then as far as promoting aviation education, we give scholarships to students, and we started with one scholarship in, I think, maybe 2002, and we're up to six different scholarships right now, and they're from all areas of aviation management, and piloting, of course, and we're pretty excited about everything that the Wisconsin Aviation has done and is doing right now, so...
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, mm-hmm. And, you know, you talked about the plaques, and you know, I'm a native from Pennsylvania, so moving here was different for me, different history.
Yeah.
And those plaques, you know, as I was be walking to meetings or just out for a stroll, you know, take a break from your computer screen for a little bit. You know, every time I'm out there, I'll pick a different plaque to read because there's just some local history, you know, that you didn't know about, you know, someone who was a B-25 pilot or aerobatic pilot or you know, even, you know, you have like Mr. Raby in there who, you know, was an agricultural aircraft pilot. And mm-hmm. It's just awesome. It's like a little mini learning experience every time you walk down that hallway.
It really is. And people don't often see that part of the museum when they visit here, but we encourage people to take a look. I know there's at the you know, when you come in, there's a little rope there, but I know you can go to the museum store and they'll let you walk down there. So we encourage people to look at those short stories. And it's really interesting how the backgrounds are so completely different. We have, like you said, you know, Paul Pobrezny and Richard Bong. But then we have people like Libby Perraud, who was an airport manager way up in northern Wisconsin, in Cable, Wisconsin. And she ran the airport after her husband passed away. She ran the airport on her own. She did all the mowing. She did not have running water in her little house on the airport. So people would come into the airport, and after she would take a bath, she would ask the pilots to empty the tub of water. So, and but she became very, very well known, and she was a great ambassador for aviation in our state, for aviation, you know, anywhere really. So we look at those backgrounds very closely, and it's not always 1 point, 2 point, 3 point. You know, they did this, that. But it's also what kind of person they were and how they really helped influence aviation and how people were interested in aviation because of the things that she did or they did. So.
Well, I always said, you know, walking the halls of not just our museum, any museum, you know, we were just a group of us, including Connor here, who's running the boards today. We were at the Air Force Museum. No different than our museum as far as when you're walking through looking at those aircraft, you know, the aircraft are cool, but you're thinking about the stories of what did this one do and who's associated with it and what the type did. And, you know, when you look at a P-38, specifically ours, you know, you think of Richard and Marge and
yes,
and, you know, and it's, you know, so it's the stories, those people stories that really get the interest going.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And we love that, you know, we live here in Oshkosh, and if we find someone who we're considering for induction, or even people who have already been inducted, and to find their stories, but then be able to see the airplanes that they flew right here in Oshkosh, it's pretty darn cool.
It is. So, yeah. I'm a little bit biased too. Yeah. So I agree though. So let me ask you, how did you get into all this? How did you get into?
Do you want the real story?
Yeah, absolutely. We want the real scoop. We're hard hitting journalism here.
So John was interested in me, and he was trying to figure out how he could keep me in his life, I think. And so the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. I can't believe I'm telling this story. But they were looking for another board member, so John asked if I would be interested, and I said I would, and the rest is history. There you go.
That's awesome.
A number of years ago. I could have told a lie, but that's really how I got involved with the Hall of Fame. And, you know, since then, I served as president, I think, for about a dozen years. I do a magazine. The Hall of Fame does a quarterly magazine. I produce that, and then I work as the membership chair as well. But I'm not on the board anymore. But I still love the organization and everything it does. So I stepped away for a little while, and then I came back about a year ago, and it's been nonstop ever since.
Wow. Now, and is the Aviation Hall of Fame what really got your spark going for airplanes too?
No, I was a pilot. I started flying in 91, I think it was. And so I was a pilot for a few years before I got, about 11 years, I guess it would have been, before I found out about the Hall of Fame. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
But it doesn't, I mean, it certainly, getting so involved with the Hall of Fame certainly keeps my passion for aviation close.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely. I always ask folks, What was the airplane you soloed in? Do you remember?
Yeah, Cessna 150, 22017. And it was in Wisconsin Rapids. And I never really thought about becoming a pilot, but I always wanted to fly over Wisconsin Rapids, where I grew up. And I knew a guy who was a pilot, and he was a flight instructor. And I asked him if we could go up sometime. And so we went up, and he said, well, I'll treat this as a you know, first flight lesson. So he put me in the left seat, and he knew a little bit about my background. I used to race motorcycles and stuff. And so it's okay. I think he knew all along that if he put me in the left seat, I would probably want to learn to fly. And I did. And I remember we took off and he's explaining what to do. And I was probably 50 feet above the ground. And I, you know, kind of like a girl. And I said, oh my God, I can't believe I'm flying. And it went really well that first flight. And about a year later, I got my private pilot certificate and flew with Duffy Geyer over in Marshfield. So that was a real treat for my check ride. So yeah.
That is too cool. That's a great story.
I don't know. I'm probably going to regret telling you all of that, but there you go.
It's okay. We won't edit it out. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you won't.
Well, let's move over to John here. And John, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're everybody I know that's learning to fly on staff, which I really love that we have so many people on staff to come here who maybe aren't pilots. Sometimes people are just, the airplanes are completely foreign to them when they come here. Mm-hmm. And I just love there's so many people that have earned their license just from being staff members here. Cindy is a great example of that in our education department. Mm-hmm. But tell us a little bit about your path into airplanes here.
Well, I started in Janesville. I took my first airplane ride when I was 8. It was a thing called a penny a pound ride at the time. And at the time, brand new 172, but now it's a pretty old aircraft. Flew over my school, my grade school, and just that was it. I was sold. The naming of the Mercury 7 was about to happen, and I was reading everything about space and flight, and quite the reader at my age that I was, and just got hooked from that moment. My dad was a private pilot, and. So we went from there and went off into the military and picked up all my flying credentials and came back. The war was over for me in the mid-70s and couldn't find a flying job. They're just too big of a pilot glut. So got a response from a job application and the chief pilot at Johnson Wax, right here in Racine, Wisconsin, suggested I go to A&P school and had one in my hometown, so I did that. And he was absolutely right. Never looked for a job after that. So add more hats to wear and make yourself more useful and indispensable, and you'll get that job. And been enjoying it ever since. I think Rose mentioned, and you did as well, Chris, the word passion. And I think that's the one common thread that we've got running through all 150 inductees and everybody, I think, that is successful in aviation is that word passion. You know, it's hard sometimes to describe what we do in all the ways that we are doing what we do in aviation, but the thing that comes out the loudest, to me at least, when I talk to folks, is that word passion, and that's what we really do, and that's why we do what we're doing here with this project. Is we're sharing this passion that we found of an individual out of Milwaukee. Dan's going to tell us a little bit more about him, but we're excited to be able to share his passion. Back to that flying with the staff here. Maybe I'm going to have to find whoever is doing all my PR work and tell them to cool it just a little bit. I actually have seven EAA staffers that I'm working with right now. Wow. So either you guys are going to have to slow down the hiring process or something, but we love every minute of it, and it's a good group of folks.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so great to hear. Let me ask you real quick, first airplane you sold, do you remember what it was and the tail number?
My first solo was a Cessna 150. It was a 1967 model, and I think it was 5.7 X-ray. I don't remember the first two. I did look it up not too long ago, and it's still out there, and as far as I know, it's still making pilots. So there you go.
It's funny how that airplane, whatever it is that you solo in, it's just always special. There's just something
absolutely,
you know, Cherokee 5712 uniform. I can remember, there's just something special about that airplane.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. I think every one of us thinks that one should be in the Smithsonian or something like that. So, and last but not least, Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to go into what this project is that you guys are working on.
Yeah, sure. So I am living on the Wanakee Airstrip currently, and I'm a private pilot. Been flying for about 12 years. I somehow got wrangled into becoming the operations manager at Wanakee. So this morning I was up at 5 a.m. spraying weeds because it was calm winds. We're going to spray today, I guess. So that's kind of what I've been doing lately along with this photo project. Before that, we lived kind of outside of Madison a bit, and I learned to fly at the Dane County and Middleton. My first solo was in a Piper Archer 2159 Quebec. It's still flying out of Madison. I did finish up my certificate at Maury, and eventually flew with Field Maury out west, and we did one of his IFR adventures, which is just an amazing experience. That was probably one of the coolest things I've been involved in. Wow. 5 days of flying out west, and again, and by then you're ready to take your IFR check ride, and it's, you've flown in the mountains. It's like real IFR flying and not the stuff we do out here where there's not mountains. Yeah. Rib Mountain doesn't count.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my short story, I guess.
Well, cool. Well, I know we're here to talk about a specific project. Would one of you like to tell us a little bit about what it is and how it came to you guys?
Sure. I've only been involved in this in the Hall of Fame for about a year or two. And this photo collection was donated after Leo Cohen's death. This was his personal and business photo collection. He died in 2014, and the collection was gifted to the Hall of Fame then. And it's kind of, it's been in storage pretty much since then, because I think technology and motivation wasn't quite there to get it figured out. And in the last year or so, the right people kind of came together and realized, like, whoa, we have this absolutely insane photo collection of, we think it's about 34,000 plus negatives of every kind of airplane of every type, and a lot of experimental, general aviation, commercial, military, everything, serial number ones. And like, those are a big thing he tries to do. The other really unique thing about this photo collection is each negative is stored in an individual envelope. They're all individually numbered, and they have typed details like you wouldn't imagine. They're all black and white photos, but on the envelope, he tells you the colors of the plane. Like this one's red, beige trim, aluminum ailerons and canopy frame, chrome struts, black landing gear. And that's on the card, but it's a black and white photo. Yeah, just amazing details. And I think that's kind of what drew me to this project was my day-to-day job. I do back-end website, databases, that kind of thing. So I was looking at, someone sent me a photo of this envelope, and I'm like, well, this is a database of photos. This isn't a photo collection. Oh. So in my brain, I'm starting to pull apart these cards. You've got the type, you've got a nickname, he writes down the position of the photo, like where he's standing in relation to the plane. You got the tail number, you have serial numbers, you have military serial numbers for planes that were ex-military. You have the date of the photo. A lot of times there's the location, the owner, engine information. It's all there. And for a lot of these photos, that's the special sauce of this collection. It's just that's it.
Wow. Wow. Well, can you tell us a little bit about Leo? What was his background?
Okay, Leo was EAA number 4. He met Paul Pobrezny a long time ago, and through the Wisconsin National Guard. And they were both, I guess today you would call them AV geeks. And so I think they grew close that way. And Leo became the first employee of EAA. And we have his original EAA card, number 4. So he did a lot of photography. He did it both personally and professionally. And he even did a lot with his family, which his family said he would always tell people that I'm not a photographer of people. I'm a photographer of airplanes. But since they've gotten deeply, his son and daughter have gotten deeply into the project, they're finding all kinds of photographs from family vacations and things like that. So, and then he worked for EAA for a I don't know the exact number of years, but he eventually left and he started his own organization or his own magazine, I should say, called Armchair Aviator. And I think he did that for about 2 years. And he did a lot of stories, shared a lot of photos. And as he collected those his own photographs, he actually did a lot of trading with other photographers of the same era. And we're talking 1940s, 50s, 60s, even into the 70s. And so he did a lot of trading with other photographers. And so even with the extreme amount of photos that he took, we have a lot in the collection that we may not have had otherwise if he hadn't had those connections with others, because they were, places in California or, gosh, I can't even remember what other states, but there are a lot of photos from around the country, in addition to a lot of them that were shot here in Wisconsin, a lot of them in Milwaukee, of course, because that's where he was from. He did, must have gone to a fair amount of the Cleveland air races, because we have a lot of photographs from, or negatives, I should say, from the Cleveland air races. And if you guys, do you have anything you want to add about Leo?
Well, certainly his background in the military. So he, mm-hmm. he had an older brother that went off and was a gunner in B-29s in the Pacific. And I think it was that fact that he was always looking up to his older brother. And so when the brother came home, they actually bought a glider trainer and a TG-6, and then we're in the process of converting it over to a powered aircraft. And so Leo soloed, had a little ground incident, nothing new to tail dragger pilots, and his soon-to-be wife kind of drew the line in the sand and said, maybe not. So that really got him going with the photography aspect of it. But it was really, I think, that family connection with his older brother, kind of looked up to him, kind of a hero, and then kept going. And they actually, both the Cohn brothers were busy, active in aviation for quite a while. Leo was an early founding member of the AAHS, the American Aviation Historical Society, submitted a lot of photos to that group. So you'll see a lot of carryover in his magazine, Armchair Aviator, to what the AAHS journal looks like. It seems that there was a fairly common style, a lot of black and white photos, as we know now, all the better. And so with all those things put together, meeting Paul at guard weekends, and eventually Paul gave him a pass to mill around on the guard ramp in Milwaukee and take pictures and coerce whoever was the management at the airport at the time. And so he got the same kind of pass. Can you imagine walking around an airport today with just a business card taking pictures? Probably wouldn't last too long, maybe end up in jail or something. But the idea, though, is that it's connections, it's knowing people, and again, that burning passion and willingness to share. The big thing, I think, too, as Dan described the envelopes and that described the photos, is that Leo really wanted these documents out into the public. And as Dan said, we were holding on to the collection until we actually had the right people and the right motivations to move forward. A lot of technology, and that's the exciting piece, is that we're going to be able to put all this into a structured database that'll be searchable. So let's say that we've got somebody that's interested in maybe an R985 for the engines that powered the Beech-18, for example. And we'll have a number of aircraft that may have been powered by that engine. And all they'll have to do is search for an R985. And we'll have all of the pictures pop up then that were related to that engine. So it's those kinds of things, I think, that make it really powerful, is that collection is going to mean a lot of things to a lot of people that way.
Well, and I think it's really important that we have these giants, sometimes regionally, of preservation and of documentation, which is what this is. And, for an East Coast kid, like myself, there was a lot of eyes on it. But, you know, when you talk to someone here, I think these photos could be a very, very important cross-section of what it was like to fly in the Midwest at that time period.
Oh, without a doubt, absolutely. And you know, the books are full of especially World War II aviators that made the balsa and paper tissue airplanes, and that was the norm. And they came from, like you say, Middle America, flyover, right, part of the world today. But they've all got that common theme. And it's just exciting to go back and kind of relive their lives through their actions and what they did after the war.
There's also something I find really romantic about the notion of, you know, it's something me and my buddy Claire would go do, was we would just go pack the car with a camera or two, and we would just drive out into, like, from Pennsylvania, we go to maybe Maryland or something, and just get lost in some back roads and then find the general aviation airport and then go find out what's on it. I mean, and a lot of times, you know, maybe nothing, maybe a Cub or something. You know, coolest thing I remember is we went out there and there was a P-51 at the gas pumps. I mean, but you just never know what's going to be there. And, you know, it was just exciting. It was almost like a hunt. Mm-hmm. When you'd roll up and onto an airport, maybe there's an air coupe or something. And, you know, that was just really cool. It was a cool way of spending a Sunday. But I still have a lot of the pictures I took from there. I mean, this is on a grander scale, but it's the same feel, same vibe of that.
Well, it really is. And I think, Chris, you've hit on something. I think there are so many pictures in shoeboxes and in attics, right, or basements. Hopefully they're not a damp basement. But there's so much information out there that, you know, if nothing else, we'd like to encourage folks, your own individual collections or maybe it was your pictures from your grandmother or grandfather, you know, treasure them and don't let them end up when they're no longer with us. Don't let their pictures go away. Right, because those are things that could be very valuable and are very valuable to a lot of us that want to keep that history alive.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my family came here from Italy, and it's always amazing to find these photos of my family in war-torn Italy. You know, that somehow we don't have a lot of them, but we still have a few. And those are cherished. I mean, that's your own family heritage right there. And this is a capture of what I would call, you know, Midwest aviation's heritage. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, so tell us just about maybe a few of the pictures that you found so far that you think are really ones that blew you away. You showed us one already of an airplane that's hanging not that far from us in the museum.
Yeah, that's the little Audrey. We stumbled upon this last weekend. There's about 7 photos, and they're all the unique part is most of Cone's photos are they're all on the ground, and he tries to capture photos when people aren't around or the airplane's not tied down. That way you can see the plane, you know, as it sits. But this kind of caught our attention because it's airborne in flight. And this was Cone and Pop Bresny flying from, I think it was from Milwaukee up to West Bend. And there was a group of 3 or 4 airplanes just flying around. Like, you know, it's a fun afternoon to fly around. And we have shots of little Audrey flying around with Paul at the controls.
And it's just so wild because, you know, every day we walk by there where my office is. I mean, I see that airplane almost every day. Mm-hmm. And I see it as a museum artifact. And it's so wild to see that same artifact, but back in the day when it was a flying airplane and it was just Paul going out with some buddies to go play with an airplane.
Right,
and,
yeah.
Just totally, totally wild to see that picture.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The Loving's Love, I think it was called.
Yeah, yeah, Neil Loving's.
We found a picture of that sitting in the grass somewhere. And I've only known that airplane as a museum piece here. So that was pretty cool. I'm not certain where he shot it. Could have been here or Rockford perhaps, but pretty neat to see those kinds of things.
That is really cool. So, and for those that don't know, Neil Loving was a double amputee pilot here. He built that aircraft, raced it. One of the funny stories is we had a gentleman I talked to who went on to fly the SR-71, who actually owned one of these airplanes, and there were only a few built. And he had the chance to talk to Neil Loving here, and he said, Neil, you know, boy, the cockpit's kind of cramped on that thing. How do you go real far? And he was like, oh, I just unscrew my legs. He goes, you guys are all handicapped. So that's awesome, though. It's so cool to hear that you know, that those pictures exist, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that is too cool. So tell us a little bit about what's going into the preservation. Tell us how you preserve each slide. Let's go from start there.
So we've kind of developed a procedure where we're using a Sony, I guess it's a mirrorless camera. It's not a DSLR technically, I guess, these days. Basically, are taking a photo of the negative. There's a light table, and the light comes from the bottom up into the camera. The camera, it's the one we're using currently, is 42 megapixels, and that gives you about 1800 DPI. It's if you're comparing it to a scanner. The really great thing about using a camera is it's instantaneous. You don't have to wait for a scanner to actually scan it. There was a couple people trying to get this collection digitized before, and it was taking, you know, minutes per image, and that's not going to work out when you have over 30,000 photos. So we've made the procedure really extremely fast, and this is all connected together. We keep the image and the envelope together. They get scanned at the same time. We have a fast document scanner that images the envelopes too. The other thing that's come together is OCR and text recognition on these envelopes has been something that's really taken off recently. We're able to actually use the same OCR technology that's in iPhones. It's all on the Macs and stuff, so we can natively use that, and it reads the text like with no errors usually. And then the unique thing is on these typed envelopes, like we have a lot of serial number ones, and the one character looks exactly like a lowercase L. And it's able to somehow figure out that's not an L, that's a one. So we have, like in this one, this would be Illinois, like it would be fine with that, and then it'd be serial number one. And it's the Apple OCR has been great. We've tried other OCR software out there too. This is all open source stuff that we're using, and it there's no comparison. It's like the new stuff is so good.
Wow, that's incredible. Now let's talk about, you're taking these negatives, mm-hmm. and you're preserving them, but let's talk about like what you just showed us with the Ford of how detailed you can get on some of the pictures.
Yeah. So we have a couple photos here of a trimotor. I believe it's at an air show down in Illinois. This is the trimotor that is currently in the Smithsonian. And this is, you know, people are walking around looking at it. And then we have a great photo of just the tail. And another unique photo for the collection. Most of these are horizontal photos. This one's a vertical photo, which is, I think I've seen two in the couple thousand I've looked at here. And if you zoom in, you can read the data plate that's on the tail, which you can see the date, you know, it was 1927, born on date. And it's just the detail that we're able to pull out of these negatives is pretty stunning.
Wow. Oh, that is incredible. So you're doing all this work, which is amazing work. I mean, thankfully you have the collection, you're preserving it. What's next? What's the next step for the collection?
So we're currently raising funds to get the entire collection professionally digitized. This entire project is we've budgeted about $65,000. We've raised about $26,000 currently. When we hit around the $40,000 mark, we are going to send the whole collection off to get digitized, and that's when the real fun starts. Is when we get all the images and the data back, and we can build the website and the database and all the tooling we need for that. So we're really looking forward to getting this project. I mean, it's steaming along. It's been so much fun to work with.
Wow. And what's very cool about that is all that data will turn into searchable data. And so if somebody wants to look up a certain airplane or, like John said, a certain engine, it'll be on the website, and I think people are going to really dig it.
Well, and I love that you've taken, you know, something that was clearly so much joy for him, and you're turning it into a something that's going to be a lot of joy for more people. I mean, you know, it's almost like sitting down with him and letting him show you his slides.
Yeah. And his son and daughter said that that's all he wanted with the collection, to make it available at some point for the public. And it's, you know, taken a while, but we're getting real close. And so so that fundraising, that's a big part of it. And we're all learning a whole lot about fundraising and writing grants and those kinds of things. But that's an important piece when you have a project like this, as big as it is. So.
Well, and I think it's cool that you'll, you know, everybody that's supporting it feels a little bit of ownership, or feels like they've done their part to help preserve this. This is,
yeah, we've had some really great support from a lot of friends, a lot of our members, of course. But we're opening, and that's part of the reason we're happy to be here today, because we want the public to know about the project. We think the public will really enjoy seeing those photographs once we get them out there. So if anyone would be willing to donate, we would love that.
Well, and if somebody does want to learn more or research maybe donating, where should I point them to?
Well, we have a website specifically. It's on our Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame. There's a special page that's dedicated to the Leo Cohn Project, as we call it, and it's wahf.org/Cohn, K-O-H-N. So wahf.org/Cohn, K-O-H-N. So
that's really awesome. Wow. Mm-hmm.
I think it's really important to say, too, that the website, once it's up and running, it's going to be available to the public for free. There's no charge to access that, to do the research and things. For those people that want to go a little deeper, maybe they're restoring an aircraft, we call it rivet level detail. That's a term that Dan has coined, and we think it's so appropriate, especially when he talks about the data plate on the trimotor. So if folks are getting that, wanting that kind of a detail and those kinds of things, there will be a small charge for that, and that's really going to take the whole collection out and keep it on the website for free for the rest of us. So we're really excited about, and again, as Rose mentioned, that's exactly what Leo wanted, was for it to be out in the public, and we're going to do our best to keep it for free. So
that's fantastic. Now, let me ask you, as you guys have gone through this, do each of you have a favorite picture that you've seen so far?
Well, Dan's the one that's seen thousands. Rose and I have only seen maybe hundreds, but what do you think?
Well, there's a helicopter photo with a crowd in the background. I think that's my favorite. It's an older, I forget which.
Sikorsky, I think.
Yeah, at some kind of air show, and the rotor blades are spinning, but there's a line of people in the background. It's probably like 100 people. Mm-hmm. And if you zoom in, you can see individual faces, and you can see the ripples on their pants from the rotor wash. And the helicopters and everything's in focus too, which is absolutely insane. Like, you can see the tread on the tire in front of the helicopter and all kinds of stuff like that. Wow. So it's just incredible detail in that photo.
Wow. How about you, John?
Yeah, I like that Sikorsky picture. It's unbelievable. As Dan's mentioned, the waving, fluttering clothes. And every single person, I think, without fail, is smiling. and so it really does touch a lot of bases, right, on that. And so I think that the fact that they're smiling, and that the clarity is the other thing. This resolution is so high that we can actually see all the smiling faces. And it's obviously the same passion that we're feeling.
That's too cool. Mm-hmm. All right, Roseanne, how about you? Do you have a favorite?
Well, there's some really cool ones. And what I like is looking at, and I can't even pick one. What I like is looking up the end numbers and finding out what happened to that airplane after it was photographed. And there was one just recently that we found out that Art Scholl eventually flew it. Art Scholl is one of our inductees. And so that was pretty cool. There's also a photo, I don't even remember what kind of airplane she flew, but her name was Grace Harris. And if you zoom in, she's sitting on the wing, and if you zoom in and look real closely, she's got her hand on her forehead, And you can't really tell if she's relieved or if she's happy or if she's disgusted, but there's emotion in her face. And to be able to you know, I don't know, did she finish a race and she was unhappy with her performance, or is she so relieved because she had such a good performance? It's really hard to tell. And it makes me want to go back and find out, you know, can I tell how well she did it on that race? So what's really fun for me is not necessarily a certain airplane, but trying to find some stories that go along with it. Oh. So,
well, and I think what's interesting is, wow, they're handing me, wow, that's a beautiful picture. I wish we could share this right now, but we will. We'll figure out how to do this. But that is a really, really, really cool picture. You know, and I think what's really important is, while surface level this collection is about airplanes, I think it's also a big cross section of America and where we were then. And, you know, spending a day out at the airport or the airfield was a big pastime. I mean, that was a huge thing, to go out, hang out with a camera and watch the airplanes go by, or go to the, you know, luckily air shows are still a huge event. We're very proud of ours here, but there's just something cool about capturing that that sort of cross section of America.
You know, and another thing that's pretty neat is, because we've gotten to know his son and daughter, Bill Cohn, who lives in Arizona, and then his daughter, Mary Ellen, who lives in Milwaukee. But they remember those trips, and especially Bill. And his dad had, I don't think we mentioned yet, that his dad was using a Kodak 616, a little folding camera that the bellows fold out. And so if anybody wanted to Google a 616, it'd be beneficial probably to see what kind of quality he got from a little camera like that. But going back to Bill, so Bill spent a lot of time at the air shows with his dad, and his dad had this leather camera case, and Bill said when he was young that camera bag was so heavy he could barely carry it, and he would drag it across the ramp. And then as he got older, he was able to carry it a little bit better. And then we have a picture of him holding the camera bag, or camera case. It's more like a case. And he's wearing funky bell bottoms, you know, so it must have been the 60s, 70s. And but what's really neat is the family donated Leo's camera. They donated the camera case and some other, I almost said paraphernalia, but other artifacts. And when you look at that leather camera bag, you can see the scratches on the bottom. And, you know, knowing that Bill was dragging it across the ramp at the airports, that's pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah. And those are displayed right now down at the Kelch Aviation Museum, right?
They will be. So the Hall of Fame started an effort, I don't know, about 2 months ago. And we are going to unveil Leo Cohn exhibit at the Kelch Aviation Museum, and we're having an unveiling ceremony on June 9th on a Sunday afternoon. We'll have some refreshments and things, and so if people want to come out, you're certainly welcome to do that. But that will be that exhibit will be there probably several months, you know. Wow. So yeah,
that's a great museum. We had a on a while back, and
yeah,
just a powerhouse and wealth of knowledge there. So,
yes, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow. We can't applaud you guys for what you're doing enough. I mean, it's remarkable. It's important preservation work that you're doing. If you guys are out there listening and you want to support them, we'll see if we can put the link right into the story as well, but or go back and listen to Rose gave it here, certainly, but I'm sure we can put it in there.
Thank you.
Again, thank you guys for what you're doing. It's a big task, but it's an important one, and can't thank you enough. It is so vital to preserve history like this. And
you deserve a big thank you as well for letting us come on and talk about it, and just thanking people in advance. If anyone is listening and can give a gift, we sure appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for everything you do for aviation, your preservation work, your work with the Wisconsin Aviation Hall of Fame, John, for literally creating aviators here on a daily basis. Again, thank you guys. Thanks for everybody that tunes in and supports our Green Dot, the comments. certainly help keep it going. We really appreciate all the good comments. If there's anything negative, we just shoot it over to Tom, let him deal with it. But but in all honesty, we're so proud to get to be a part of the Green Dot and get to hang out and talk with great folks like yourself. So keep the comments coming, keep listening, and we'll chat with you next time when you're cleared to land on the Green Dot.